Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn-Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, December 17th, 2013. This is our 212 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue. And occasionally we hear from Sharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello, welcome. Well, Michael was trying to call me last Monday, a week ago, and I was switching over to another computer, and I guess you were hoping to record on Monday and then posted on Tuesday, but I was just noticing I don't hear. I'm dealing with a new computer, so, and new program. So go ahead, Michael, say something. Let me see this thing bounce.
Okay, so you were mentioning China's moon rover lands and starts its exploration on the moon.
Yeah, that's very exciting. I mean, Nedim wrote to me, says, I was wondering if on the next broadcast you guys can talk about the China moon landing. They just landed the Jade Rabbit, a rover with HD cameras and a lot of sophisticated equipment on the moon today. Could be interesting if they point it to go around and check out any possible structures on the moon. Yep, thanks, Nedim. Yeah, so I saw one photograph that they sent back that was looked rather interesting. And it's going to be pretty neat to have that thing run around and see what we see and see what China sends back. I saw what the U.S. posted as their moon photographs. And I was just saying to Michael that I recently saw this YouTube that this fellow walked up to, sorry, I don't know his name, walked up to the podium where Neil Armstrong was speaking with another gentleman, and he said, "Mr. Armstrong, I want you to put your hand on the Bible and swear you've been to the moon." And he just refused to. And then at one point he said, "That's probably not a real Bible." And I have to find that and send that to Michael. But anyway, China's now on the moon, or there are no physical people are there, but their rover is there, which is a big accomplishment. We never went back. It's like Christopher Columbus coming here in 1492 and never coming back. So we've had a lot of ships travel. So anyway, so go ahead, Michael. What did you want to say about that moon landing? You said you saw
Let me find something here. Hang on. Okay.
So while I'm...
Yeah. I don't know about... Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Yeah, I don't know about Mr. Armstrong. But I got my Bible here. It's King James Version of the Bible. And I have my hand, I actually am embracing the Bible like I always like to do. And it's right against my heart. And I want to tell everybody right now that I have taken a trip and gone to the New Jerusalem. I was educated at the New Jerusalem. Whether we went to the moon or not, I am not afraid in the sight of God to see this and to have been educated there and to have been a tune there, by which case I have the ability to share mind with many of the celestial guardians of destiny, as well as guardians of our personal victories over the many, you might say, trials and tribulations that are both personal and worldwide that our planet is going through right now. And the most important thing that we want to do is not so much as to debunk other things, but to find truth, not lies. Because truth is what always needs to have victory. It's sort of like turning on a light. You might say you turn on a light and darkness is defeated immediately, rather than trying to place darkness over what is already illuminated. That would be more akin to someone who wants to cover something up. What good is it to say that we have no inheritance in the universe? And this is the thing we want to uncover, because the destiny of all human race is far beyond our planet, far beyond there. So I hope we can truly see that. So that is my statement for the opening right now.
Well, that was a surprise.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't need to be, because, you know, if a person wants to do something, they can do many things in today's video and digital technologies. There's so many ways in which things can be cut and pasted and made into various forms. I remember how you had this one segment of photos you had downloaded from Cassini concerning this what looked like a beam or something coming out of this observed moon orbiting Saturn, and showed that and thought it wonderful. And it went semi-viral on a thing, and somebody wanted to debunk it. And they went through an extremely involved case in which they tried to say that it was nothing but lens flare. To go through so many stages to try to debunk, in fact, even to the point of actually making up a falsified lens flare, because it was only in one segment. It didn't show this particular lens flare from both angles. And then he says it's lens flare because he created the other angles. This kind of stuff goes on all the time. But the greatest fear that I think humanity has and individuals have is the reality that we are not the top dogs. There are many, many, many more sentient beings of much, much higher evolved destiny, attainment. And they, of course, are on the same path that we are, except we are, you might say, more regressed and retarded in because of the fact that the elevation of our planet was halted because of the Lucifer Rebellion. And then what we live in right now is allowed to continue because of the tremendous character development and, you might say, personal attainments that are made by individuals who, through search and through the draw and attunement of the Holy Spirit are in quest of finding the same thing I was looking for, finding God's reality and thus the evidence fully of his workmanship throughout the universe. So there is China. They're making their move, spending a lot of money, spending a lot of their mind power to attain what the United States had attained back in the 60s. And using much better technology and robotic, and indeed coming forward with that result. There's a lot of noise you had there for a while.
Yeah, it's I just tried to get a cat to be quiet. A cat was climbing in a paper bag. Oh, I don't have a studio, Michael. It's like, I have a studio full of cats. And when I was working with GarageBand, I called Apple, and I had an advisor help me with setting this up, and because it was a little different than before. And all of a sudden, one of my cats threw up in the background, and I should have said, oh, that's one of my cats throwing up, but.
Too much information.
Too much information.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's like.
Well, anyway, I guess we can celebrate the fact that we have China as a space-faring nation, you know. The problem with the other one, who's a pretender right now, which is North Korea, is it's being led by an absolute sane person right now who goes and kills his uncle, his girlfriend, 80 other people, and he's just gone crazy. He's just an absolutely evil person right now. So who's to say how far he would take it? So the world is definitely imbalanced, especially if they have people like that in power who will retain their power as long as they can. But the more insidious factors about, let's say, even NASA is that, does it insidiously make up or hide important information? Recently, there's been in its observation of the sun and the track of Comet Ison, is that there have been some missing times in there in terms of what they were able to put out to the public. So it seems like, is there some kind of cover-up here? But this one big object, the sphere, that was there and sort of disappeared, is troublesome because they probably have it under observation, but they don't want to let the rest of the world know what they got. And it's kind of an artifact that they can't explain.
You're talking about the sphere that was right behind the comet, Ison?
Yeah, that I sent a video of from BP Earthwatch. He had got that. And also showing some of the observations that were taking place in terms of how a invisible object seemed to have the sort of wind deflect around it. And that was pretty strong in terms of its evidence, in terms of the reality of the sphere. And we know, and I know for a very fact, that the sphere that I was in, the sun, the sphere of a creator sun, which is luminous. The other architectural spheres are non-luminous and many times non-observable. This is one of the characteristics of their purpose. And it seems to be that this one is really close in proximity to our planet for perhaps an important reason. Now, the important reason that as a pastor formally, as a scholar biblically, I look into the eschatology and the timing of the end days. And I look at those things which are being fulfilled. And there's so many things that are being fulfilled right now, biblically, in terms of what was written in terms of prophetic accounting, looking forward into time of the end. These national problems statewide throughout the different world governments, whether it be smaller ones or larger ones, there's just this turmoil going on, as well as celestial events, as well as weather events. One of the weather events, I think, was interesting was that you got snow in Egypt on top of the pyramids and the Sphinx, dusting them off. It was a lot more than dust. I've been watching the top of my mountain for snow, and it hasn't formed any snow. Yet in other areas, which are much more unusual to form snow, to get snowfall, and like in Egypt and also in Vietnam, in China, that they're getting these strange snowfalls. And that is an indicator either that the amount of solar energy is being reduced or there is a different mechanism at work in terms of how our planet functions in its weather systems, which I think has pretty much something to do with a type of perturbance caused by a extraplanetary object somewhere, in which may have been observed. Now, if this is a architectural sphere, it will be navigable and can move about freely on its own accord, while many times acting within the limits of the natural physics of the situation. And another thing that was interesting about the comet Ison is comet Ison's trajectory was not exact. It was a bit off of what was predicted. And apparently, there are some people who are looking at that trajectory around the sun and its delta configuration and its spread to be more in terms of intercepting our planet soon, in terms of perhaps a meteoric showers and displays, as well as we may find ourselves falling into the toe or the tail of Comet Ison's path in early January. So these things are something ahead of us that we should take a concern with. And I remember going to the Shaduns and asking them for specifics, and he says, let your own technology direct you. And I believe that much of it out there, our technologies are doing a good job, yet our friendly NASA is perhaps covering up some things. And that sphere, by the way, resulted in apparently four individuals losing their job, that video that was that leaked out of there. So it was termed as true and real as far as that sphere. That we have it for another time. Yeah, I'll post it, I guess, the link to that.
Yes, one of the listen pages from last week, well, from
last
211, hour 211.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are many things that we need to continue to look at. But the important factor is that intervention will come until there's really dire need because of a perhaps extinction level event that would need to be intervened with, whether it's one that prevents this extinction level event, or another, which is where a planet has to be emptied of its salvageable and sentient population. which would require a very large, large place. Yeah, if that would be done in terms of a physical life. So in any case, there's all these events that are tying together. It sort of give us a curious point to get curious and allow one of the things that the Shaduns have been desiring, that you and we actually manipulate our time schedules, our conscious mind, things we do, to take away from our normal activities, to place more time in terms of attuning ourselves to the higher conscious mind. So anyway, the higher conscious mind is where really our consciousness comes from. The brain mechanism is much more a mechanism of reception and translation. We receive many different inputs for our sensory abilities, which many of them are directly related to our body. Five senses, you might say. However, where the mind interprets much of this is through the channels which are, you might say, organizing mind control, the mind, how our mind works and thinks. And that has a lot to do with its ability to receive and be attuned to lower, progressively higher spiritual energies. These energies are mindal. They have a lot to do with perhaps instinctive functions, autonomic functions, are many of the autonomic functions of ourselves are, whether they be vegetable functions in the plant environment, or you know, down at the level of insects and stuff. These are more wondrous in terms of how they pick up instinctively and function accordingly, the design. But there are higher levels where brain function begins to become a receptive area, where the brain function is now being able to go into what would be considered instinctive timing, instinctive behaviors. And many of these instinctive behaviors are being interrupted somehow. Some say through magnetic changes, like the whales beaching themselves, birds getting confused in terms of their migration paths. Other animal migration paths are being interrupted. Some attributed to purely magnetic changes, but there is also attunements that are instinctive and having to do with mind functions. And these are also being interrupted. And what interrupts them are many, many factors, especially what level or what point of receptivity and functionality these animals are functioning at. Now, looking at us as the highest sentient being here, and the only sentient being here from planet or from our planetary origin, although we've genetically been modified in some way or another, but the attunement was primary. In other words, this planet and its attunement to the higher mind, celestial mind, was observed over a million years ago. So our human nature is become attuned that long ago. And it is this attunement that is of great interest to the celestials because of the fact that that is how the highest understanding comes through this engagement. In other words, if people were only to think that our brain is the only functional capacity or device for thinking, then we're limiting ourselves to the enclosure. And there are many people who function within this enclosed environment. But those that look beyond that and are being motivated to look at a higher realm, looking to the heavens, look.
All right, we're back on with Michael. We lost Skype for a second, but we're back on now.
Yes. And what I was talking about is mind attunement to higher mind. And that what gives us our inspiration and elevates us continually. And this continual elevation of consciousness through this, through our meditation. You know, one of the things is that we know about meditation, we hear about it, we don't understand. Some people practice it, but what is it for? What is the purpose? Why does a monk climb the top of a mountain, stay there, and is become a recluse, you might say, putting up some kind of a monastery way up there to receive what inspiration and what knowledge? Well, this is an important factor, is that they realize that you need to take time out to get that higher consciousness. But if we only remain within the realm of our domain, which does not require that, then we do not grow. We essentially remain closer to the animal than the divine, than the celestial mind. And our ultimate thing is to bring our consciousness to this higher realm, this higher level. And that because of that, we will rise up to a higher realm of both in terms of the development of our civilization as well as our own personal journey to the higher mind and ultimately into you might say pure divinity of mind, of character, the merging of both the divine and our own personality through and life experience. It's that journey that we need to take, is to move past that, you know, to move past this fear reaction, animalistic reaction, is get rid of those things that threaten you. And perhaps that's one of the more basic emotions that motivates Kim Jong-un to kill his relatives and, to go ahead and do those things, you know, which is pretty base and on a low end. And of course, how can he lead a country to a higher realm if he's only thinking in those levels? You know, it's just going to remain pretty much in the dark. There are things that desire to be preserved that will need to be transformed. But the most important thing that needs to be transformed is our personal attunement. And there is a transition now that is happening, and it can de-link us from many of the more base instinctive behaviors. But hopefully at that point, we'll be able to, or have already built the personal connections that we need to have built. There's in Christian circles, in terms of this terms of many of what would be considered Christian is that, well, popular Christianity would be this term of getting saved, where you accept Jesus Christ as personal Lord and Savior. And ultimately what it does is it starts you on track to developing this higher mind relationship with divinity. And if you only start it and never continue it, well, then you almost stay in the same spot, but a spot that is at least filled with a lot of hope and a lot of, many times, a lot of pressure that will put the individual to a point where they continually are guided to keep in contact. And that sometimes takes the form of, you might say, trial or tough times in which a person needs to sit back and wonder and ask for really divine inspiration and divine guidance. And then it brings this whole role of growth, divine growth, back on track in the relational development. It's not to say that we divorce ourselves from our planetary duties, our personal lives in terms of functioning here as embodied will creatures, having, you know, the capability of navigating our environment quite well. The ultimate purpose has to always remain in place. And thereby, when these ultimate purposes are always remaining in place, the direction of an organization of many of our, you might say, artificial citizens. I'm talking about corporations. They're artificial. They're supposedly like having the rights of a human being, but not even human. And many people will de-link that from humanity. But there are others, I've noticed, who really realize that a corporation can be given a heart. And this heart would be in terms of its corporate community, those that share that same aspiration. And many of these are taking their form in terms of, you know, perhaps the green movement, the movement to continually balance ourselves in respect to our environment and our planet, and giving that perhaps an expansion throughout society and invading many of those territories which were basically only profit-driven. And there are more and more people who realize that at the lowest level of development of entrepreneurship, today's entrepreneur training doesn't go to the point of where it used to be, which was how are you going to make a profit. Instead, they have how are you going to better, you know, do something worthwhile while being able to make a profit. This is much more important than just having a pure profit motive, and that's being taught at more modern entrepreneurial training, which is very interesting because at one time it wasn't that way at all. It was just, what do you want to do to make money? Because that's what an entrepreneur was. They put that in terms of corporate behavior, and that's all going to change. So anyway, that's a little bit of where I think the Shiduans want us to start our thinking to be readjusted, because then it will end up having traction on our planet and then really changing the globe. But there are things that are happening right now in the celestial environment that are being prevented, that could very well bring about extinction level event.
An extinction what?
An extinction level event that is out there, you know, a gigantic asteroid that impact our planet, things like that. It's been looked for, and we're seeing more and more warnings. But what warning, the greatest warning, the most important warning is that we should try to attune ourselves, at least look up. And this is where, you know, Shawnee sent in some photos of her looking up. And this is where the draw of the spiritual push is happening, where we are to be drawn out to look up, to attune ourselves to the celestial voice, which brings us to a higher level of thinking. Because believe it or not, our brains, our brain or mind mechanism is only one part of what we really are. And it really functions as more of a receptive interpreter than a pure thinking machine. It's a receptive interpreter that receives insight both from sensory input as well as mindful input, divine mindful input, which gives us a kind of intelligence that is far above the animals, even if they have physically larger brains than we do. And there is even there's evidence in our record that, I guess Cro-Magnon had a much larger cranial vault, bigger brain perhaps because of that, but may not have had the receptivity or even have had that adjustment in there, or maybe had it at a very high level and it was tried to be destroyed in order to bring about a type of artificial civilization where the true highest civilization is one which would bring about the structures necessary to bring about resource activation, resources that are made more abundant so that we know there'd be more time. One of the things that I remember that Shiduns was saying is that one of their frustrations was that every time you elevate, every time they elevated humanity to a level in which they had more time, they never took that time and filled it up with divine development. They ended up looking for other things that simply cluttered the life mechanism, the mind mechanism. In other words, they filled their life with useless, perhaps pleasures, useless things. One of the things that I have found was that when a person finds true direction and enlightenment, everything becomes, in terms of their motive and aspirations, become more closely akin to play, and it becomes the truly divine way. Because when you look at, when I was with the celestial, they didn't seem to be unhappy at all. And it's like no miserable person around. Why? Because they had this place of enjoyment that was not in pursuit of something that would never satisfy, because they had the energy of satisfactions, or the knowledge of what really satisfied, implanted into their very nature, to the very exploration. So part of their enjoyment is, of course, exploration, and then even to nurture individuals such as ourselves, or groups, nations, and seeing them move up, but without coming to terrible directions. desperate directions, you might say, in terms like North Korea. Anyway, that's just my being on the soapbox right now.
The photographs that Wendy's daughter sent from New Zealand a couple weeks ago. I got to move my computer up here that has all this noise, fan with a lot of noise. There were 12 photographs she sent, and Michael and I talked a little bit about them before we started. And I have posted, or I'm going to have three of them on the listen page, which the three kind of depict what all 12 of them depict. There's a what appears to be like a horizontal rainbow, which I've seen them in the clouds here. Michael said he really hasn't seen them in Hawaii. They're usually arched in Hawaii, but sometimes they're horizontal here. And then there's another image of the second image, which is really my first image. I have three images posted, but Shawnee has pointed her camera. Has pointed her camera directly at the sun, and with all that moisture in the sky, it produces a halo around the sun. But it looks like there's one lens image, or there's an object with a violet color around it, which is really interesting. With a single lens reflex, and I remember my single lens reflex had 7 or 9 lenses inside, or a bunch of lenses, and you could see every lens. I don't know how many lenses her camera has, but this shows one. It could be a lens refraction, or it could be an object. And then, Michael, those other photographs, like the one with the antenna, the house antenna on the left, it looks like a violet-colored bar coming down from the sun. And the violet color literally stops at one point. You can see the refraction from the sun coming out like coming from a center point in the sun and then coming out. And the third image I have posted on the listen page shows it on the left and also on the right. And the one on the right is a half sphere of violet color. What do you think those are?
I don't know. I think that there are many things. When you take pictures of very bright objects, especially the sun, I mean, we fully have to expect that there would be some kind of optical problems that can be caused through like lensing effects, even optical effects that are within the atmosphere, which is also observed. But those things are not so important as much, because I remember, of course, having as a child the story of Noah and the ark, and then after the ark lands, and then God set his bow in the sky as a promise that he would never flood, judge the planet again by a flood. And it's interesting to note that optical effects have been observed at many occasions where it has produced higher level intelligence and information. Some call these information times prophetic, where prophets themselves, you know, would see something and then it would incur some other. But one of the most important things that happens at any one of those things is that there is a mind connection. There is a connection of mind and consciousness that makes its presence known. And that confirmation is so important, because when that happens, sometimes it can happen fearfully because it seems strange. It can be unobserved, like you're looking, being stared at, or it's I remember when I saw this beautiful star that came and moved in, and it was a point in which absolute consciousness contacted me, and it was troublesome because it was very strong in terms of how our minds connected. And this is one of the more important factors. So we may have a photographic record of what was to be, you might say, called out. And I believe that Shanae has been called out to come look and say hello many times. And maybe she can find something in there which gives evidence. But much of the time, they won't give us much evidence. The most important evidence that they want us to have is this mind or contact evidence. And if we, you know, remain only using our base sensory abilities, you know, the vision, sight, you know, or even sound, and other things, that's, you know, more base, like tactile, it would be very, very hard to get. And most of the time we look at vision or acoustic, but right now I think that, as an example, when we act out an effort like that, it is evidencing that they are wanting to help guide us many times to protect us, as well as to help us progress on the ascension path, to be the higher, to make the ascension process more real and more joyous.
Make the ascension process more real?
Yeah, through sometimes evidences. You know, when it comes down to understanding the energies of life energies and forces, to just see, I remember intercepting people's lives, and then we would call that just laying hands and praying on a person. And when you lay hands and pray on a person, it's miraculous. Energies flow. It's almost like you are an individual. It becomes a gateway of celestial energy, spiritual energy, Holy Spirit energy that flows from, you know, one vehicle to another, and it ends up doing things like healing a person from a disease and lifting their spirits high. You wonder at it. And now there's even physical, scientific type of technologies out there that have gone past the observed. You ever heard of Kirlian photography? Well, Kirlian photography is one that was noticed in, you know, electrically charged glass that people would take pictures of, like that leaf, and they cut the leaf off, and then it will have this same image as they charge the leaf, and they could take this picture of it even when part of the leaf was gone, you know, and it was only visible primarily around living material. Well, it's gone to a level in which the observable becomes three-dimensional with newer technologies. And what they're finding is that the energies that were supposedly not observable, only given spiritual kinds of connotation, were actually observable through that technologies. So maybe some of the energies that are photographed could be classified as lensing artifacts, or, you know, commonly called lens flares, but could also very well be photographing some actual real force or event So they've used this technology for observing when a person who has, let's say, ability to heal through their touch, and they actually can find and photograph the difference between a neutral state or a normal state and a state of intent where they intend to share this energy. And this is something that many people will feel a lot, even when they don't, you know, they're not a transmitter of this energy, but a receiver more. And I remember so many times having people just comment to me how wonderful they felt, you know, when just from that touch or the intent or the prayer and this energy that comes through them, which is guided by our personal will, gated, you might say, channeled. So that's all part of what will bring the higher society, and it needs to continually flow. This is one of the things that made it seem like I wish we could just be that way. I want to have that type of energy that can only be expressed as, if we were to use a common word, would be called love. But it's actually, now they can actually observe this energy force of love, and it can be seen as a radiance, an aura. So that's just all part of what I have a comment for. Much of this came from the Sharuns for Shanae's benefit to know that. Yeah. Not only receive a record, but receive the celestial embrace. You know, they don't wrap their hands around you and give you a big squeeze. They actually have a sweet embrace, a call. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like much of what is out in the UFO community about UFOs and aliens and invasions and all of this stuff that is negative. It can very well be, but the highest part of them all is this power that is in terms of love. And it all of that terrible stuff, which is based and on the lower level, must absolutely relinquish their hold on your normal mortal mechanisms. That was one of the things that I would classify terror, fear, of the unknown, of, you know, that when I felt this embrace come from Nella, who said, "Michael, don't be afraid." It just, wow, it just melted away. And in its place was this infilling of real, genuine love of a higher level, but yet resembling the level of you might say, a mother's soothing, calming voice, you know, yet having so much more embedded in that. This is what they're doing right now. They're trying to call out to us, and they've been doing that for a long time, and yet getting the frustration of the very nature of the fact that we are in a paradox between one side of us, which is base and natural animal, that, like, if you threaten me, uncle, I'll kill you. And okay, well, you're anti against the state. Next thing you know, Kim Jong-un kills his uncle. Well, it really wasn't him. His orders were. Why? Because he's reacting at a very low level, base nature and animal level. And yet we're called to much higher level than that. And that, those forces, when we apply, and if we can learn how to apply this higher dimensional love, even that kind of behavior will melt, will literally fall away under its flow. This is what will bring us this wonderful level of truly high level of civilization.
Last week you sent a YouTube link to me with that circular craft on the knoll of a hill and the aliens waving.
Yeah. We were trying to debunk it.
Well, you know, we didn't really get a chance to talk about it on the air.
Yeah. Well, you know, in looking at it, it's so clear. Yet, you know, yet it's not quite perfectly in focus. And yet the blur on the autofocus in the background and the foreground and everything matches the autofocus. So it's like, you know, it's not as if a perfectly sharp image was placed in there or overlaid. It's, you know, done.
I was surprised the craft wasn't a continuous smooth surface.
Well, the technology
had ridges there.
Yeah, I remember before seeing this, you know, the picture, the YouTube, about a week before that, I was, I always take time out. This is how I take time out. I have a conversation with the shadows. Okay, now this goes on sometimes. Me saying a couple comments and they just come in with a flood of information. And many times it boils down to something simple. And one of the most simple was, do you think that we will always have the same type of craft? You know, if you were to think that we would only have one and not make any improvements to it or adjust it for its newer functions, you're wrong. We have new models.
Right.
Okay, so I don't know. This might be the 2013 model. I don't know. But then I saw it, and I, you know, immediately when I first saw that, if it wasn't for them giving me this newer insight, I might have just, you know, said, oh, it's somebody's great CGI, you know. Mm-hmm. They're taking computer graphics up, so every little, you know. But I've seen other work that is CGI that was trying to be, you know, pawned off as an observation. And you could tell it was CGI, you know, even if they did it really well. One of the things you observed was, as it took off, there was this cloud of dust underneath, as if there was actual physical movement before the craft became transdimensionalized. In other words, moved between dimensions in order to break light speed.
Oh, yeah.
There was a physical lift, right?
When it just lifted off the surface of the planet, of our planet, it kind of took the dust with it a little bit.
Yeah, there was a vacuum that had to be.
Yes.
It had to be filled, and mm-hmm. it made a world a vortex of dust under the craft, which was pretty well done. And some of the things you were concerned about was that the tall white over there who was waving had a dark shape around him. And it turned out after the craft left, it was a shadow from the tree.
Yes, it was like a tree that was in the distance that color.
Yeah, and there was a shadow behind it. And mm-hmm. it didn't change. And I think, that's another one we try to debunk. You know, there's other factors that looks like it almost has somewhat of the design of the Ezekiel craft, you know. Did I send you that parallel? The Ezekiel craft, artist rendering of what this NASA engineer scientist said, proposed that the Ezekiel's ship looked like. And the undercarriage took on that shape, you know, as well as having that beam of light. So there was a bit of that involved there. And I said, could this have been, you know, what Ezekiel had observed? Because Ezekiel definitely was functioning with the celestials themselves. And many times human beings would think that they were talking with, you know, God, but it was really just a higher entity of maybe very high. You know, one of the highest entities I ever met was the Most High Verandadeck Observers, which have the right given to them by the universe creator to affect their judgment into the affairs of men in order for the preservation and development of the society or the planetary good, which they're observing in terms of a rebellious world, a world that's off kilter, off balance. And that means that those that are in between, down to our levels, are very much, you might say, human beings, but of non, you know, not born here on the planet, but born off planet, grew up on. So from there, all the way up to the Verandadeck Observer, filled with a lot of different levels of responsibility and agents of, you might say, fulfilling the heavenly domain with, you know, their part in the responsible governance and function of the celestial environment and grand civilization of the heavens. In fact, I remember looking at one of the ones was the Panoptian repairman. He was like these faithful ones. There are from Satania of Panoptia. They're small. They're like 2 feet tall. They look like children. But one of them was keyed out by my guide, and he told me they're not children. And it's just, they really like to do a lot of maintenance and functions and repairs and things like that. And I go, what? This place needs repair? Oh, it says, yeah, well, they have different ways of doing it, you know. So here he comes in, and one guy looks a little bit different. He's more like an older guy, you know. And he had an apparel that resembled like an overall, but it had pockets in it. So he had devices in it, but they weren't like, you know, hammers and screwdrivers and pliers. No, they weren't that. They were more like devices. But then I realized, oh, yeah, now I know what you mean. He's a guy that he goes around and adjusts stuff, I guess, or whatever, which is very interesting because, you know, sculpture was using some kind of a device which was able to, he said, of sculpting, like how we sculpt, we would take something like a piece of marble and carve away thing, the stone to chisel away to end up with the structure or the statue or whatever we're making. It's more closely aligned to a potter or clay work. So they develop from there and they build out. And the parallel point I'm trying to make was that the technology was a device, not so much tools like what a person who works with clay would use, you know, various spatulas and things like that. But anyway, having that domain, and they're all functioning within this domain of higher love, is where we are to ascend to. But right now there's a lot of darkness. It wants to, you know, keep its hold on the planet. And sometimes you might say preserving the level in which we live. In other words, we don't want to go too far beyond that. And when it goes beyond that, then we've got to destroy everything that we kind of like say is real in terms of our concept of modern or older physics. Today, the concept of the ether is, which was back in the 30s, 40s, as absolutely garbage. Prior to that, it was thought of as quite real. Then it was put away as being absolutely ridiculous. Today, that concept is very much back in play because it fulfills part of explaining the reality structure we're in. Although they don't give it that way, but the quantum vapor, the quantum domain, space, and now space is no longer considered empty. And we're in other words, we're moving toward exactly where back in 1972 when it was taken there, there were very different mindset. And by the way, back in those days, that was our Apollo days. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
Well, I have posted that YouTube on the listen page for this hour of 212. So you can click on that and see that craft. You can see the underside of the craft, and you can also see the cameraman just lose it after the thing just shot off the ground. A second later, he lost it. It looks like he dropped the camera almost. You can see the grass, and then he picks up the camera again and focuses on the objects in the sky. And then it starts to move, and a flash of light, it was gone.
Yeah. I'm not sure about that part. Never observed that part. The closest that I've come to observing that part is the record that you got from Cassini in terms of that picture of the New Jerusalem and having that donut of light where you had the...
those three images right after one another from Cassini.
Yeah. You can see the stars are all in the same spot. Mm-hmm. And the cylinder was probably moved in one direction.
That was photograph number one.
Yeah. And then when it finally disappeared, there was a donut of light.
That was number two.
Yeah.
And then that strange, what you called the light bulb, is number three.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The luminous sphere, yeah.
I was glad I found those on all those images coming back from Cassini.
Yeah. And you said that NASA hasn't taken those down.
Last I looked, they are still up there. So there's a link that you can click on there and see the exact same images on the NASA, the JPL pages.
Yeah.
You know, gov.org. So, and nobody knows those photographs. That's funny.
Well, it's yours. You discovered them.
Well, but, I mean, they were there for everyone to find.
Yeah.
Including NASA to find. And, that should be.
Yeah. Well, that's how, you would probably be directed to find them, kind of driven to to go through them because they were there.
I was driven.
When you mentioned that to me, you sound like how many times the celestial guidance comes in. You're driven. It seems like this external force drives you to do something, And that's exactly what it is. It's really. Like Shani going out there and taking that picture. You're driven. But that's exactly what they want us to become related to, because that is where we will begin to discover and become elevated and make the proper make our circles of divine attainment, as they pressure us toward attaining that. And we take on the character beyond, the animal nature, which Kim Jong-un just epitomizes, you know, that having this much power to do good and doing so much evil because of relating to UNITAR, base instinctual terror, fear, insecurity, low requirements, I guess, for life. And that's an example of a low person.
Well, we're a little over our hour. Sorry about all the noise in the background and getting this new program to work.
I heard the meow.
Oh, that was from downstairs. I heard the meow.
Yeah.
I didn't set my recording level to automatic, so I hope my side over here wasn't too loud.
And my Bible is still, you know, I still got it all. I'm still hugging my Bible.
Good.
Like, so, you know, I'm trying to be.
That was nice you said that.
If you need it, yeah, I mean, anyone needs assurance, okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michael, we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Okay.
And I hope this recording's all right. As far as, because the illustration is a little different, or.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But if anybody can debunk that video, debunk it.
Oh, yes, debunk it and send it in, and we'll talk about it some more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Aloha, Michael.
Aloha.